White Aryan Resistance calling. White Aryan Resistance calling. This is the White Aryan Resistance Radio Network. Your host for today's show is Tom Metzger, Terrible Tommy. So get a spot of tea, sit down and relax, because it's time for another show on the White Aryan Resistance Radio Network.
Yes, this is the White Aryan Resistance. White Aryan Resistance calling. White Aryan Resistance radio calling from North Central Indiana, where we have blizzard conditions today. It's wild around here, I'm telling you. I even had a whiteout this morning. That's where you can't really see hardly anything. So, fun and games, man. Global warming and all that stuff. Yeah, right here at January 7th, 2015, I had to get back in a groove or get forward in a groove about saying 2015. I've been saying 2014, and my webmaster keeps saying, hey, it's the 15th, hey, it's 2015. Okay, I got it, okay. I had a little trouble uploading shows yesterday. I think it's all straightened out, but I'll have to check that more carefully when I load it. And I assume it's ready to go, and I send it, and then you don't get it. That's a problem. Okay, well, it's about I think we've got about 8 inches of snow out there, which is not as bad as Minnesota and places like that, and Buffalo, New York. They always get creamed. Yeah. And it's 30 degrees down in Florida. I forget the name of the town. I should remember it because I'm Fort Myers. 30 degrees. I got a high school buddy. Him and his wife took off down there about a month ago. They always go down all winter. And he's cussing up a storm. Well, I'll tell you what. This is Wotan's Day. Wotan. Yeah. And guess who that reminds us of? David Lane, you got it, you're right. Yeah, David Lane Day. So, Dave likes to hear Sling Blade. So let's put on a Sling Blade show here for everybody. Just settle back, get yourself a coffee, tea, a beer, a whiskey, whatever turns you on, baby. And we're going to go with it right now.
Today's politicians can pass all kinds of laws that destroy American freedom because the average citizen is lazy and stupid. Learn to operate under the police state conditions, and you'll manage to stay under the radar. The light in this room is very bad, comrades, so bear with me in my subterranean underground dwelling. So it is said that if you know your enemies and know yourself, you can win 100 battles without a single loss. If you only know yourself but not your opponent, you may win or you may lose. If you know neither yourself nor your enemy, you will always endanger yourself. I guess Sun Tzu said something to that effect. Or as the way I like to put it, a white man who translated Sun Tzu said that. I truly believe that when it comes to translating the Western mind from Indo-European languages into a language that doesn't have nowhere near the alphabet that we have, or the phonetics even, how can you truly translate the Western Aryan mind to non-Aryans? I truly believe that the man who translated Sun Tzu, I believe that what we got in the Art of War is really a lot of Aryan spiritual influence, because I truly believe that even vice versa. I don't believe that the white man can fully translate the Asian mind, because we evolved on two different evolutionary paths. the Asian is known. It sounds insulting, but it's really not. The Asian has an insect mentality. They are born to conform. And white men, well, we used to be, for the most part, we were born to be individuals, to set our own path. So let's talk about some fun facts and thoughts on firearm forensics. Frustrating the ballistic fingerprinting of firearms. Use a caliber conversion kit to confuse the enemy. How can a 45 caliber ACP pistol be responsible for a crime involving a 22 slug found at the scene? Caliber conversion kits usually replace the entire top half of a pistol, a new firing pin, extractor, barrel, etc. This is important because it changes every part that comes into contact with the ammunition. A 45 caliber using a new top half is 100% ballistically different from its original configuration. In fact, investigators will be completely convinced that firearm was completely unrelated. In fact, the firearm was used just with a caliber conversion kit. Black powder revolvers can still be ordered by the mail. I think so. I think that is true. If you want to order black powder revolvers, that can be done so through the mail, ordered with no paperwork and no questions asked to anywhere. You can pay with a money order and it can be shipped to a post office box, no problem. Conversion cylinders convert these black powder firearms to fire modern center fire ammunition. Interesting. Two great manufacturers are the Kirst conversion cylinder, K-I-R-S-T, Kirst conversion cylinder, and the R&D conversion cylinder. The Ruger Old Army revolver is the best black powder revolver for this configuration period. Kirst converter, that's K-I-R-S-T-K-O-N-V-E-R-T-E-R. Kirst converter, converter spelled with a K, probably a German company, .com, KirstConverter.com, and FCSolter.com. Sell the conversion cylinders, and Cabela's.com sells black powder revolvers. Cabela's, that's a store not too far from me. Rifle striations on a slug can tell enemy examiners a lot about the firearm that discharged that bullet. Colt firearms are made with a left-hand twist. Smith & Wesson firearms are made with a right-hand twist. Interesting. Very interesting. If it sounds out of order, it's because of the way these pages are placed, so I hope everything's all right with this. Twist rates are different among different manufacturers. Left-handed twist, right-handed twist. Different calibers. Hexagonal and octagonal rifling and rates of twist can be found on slugs can disqualify certain makes and models of pistols based on this information alone. Of course, police think you're not smart enough to buy aftermarket barrels, which can change this data and point away from the actual brand of firearm in question. Glocks, all 9mm, except 357 SIG and 10mm calibers, use a twist rate of 1 in 9.84. In a few minutes, I found replacement barrels with a twist rate of 1 in 16. Changing the stock barrel of a firearm can seriously mislead investigations into thinking they are looking at the wrong firearm right off the bat because an extremely obvious detail like caliber and twist rate is wrong. How often do crack dealing niggers change the barrel on their guns? Never. cartridge casings, brass, which are made of brass, are easier to identify than bullets. Obviously, bullets are usually severely deformed on impact. You know, I've seen them on a forensic show. I've seen them get striations from the lands and grooves of the inside of a barrel off of just a fragment of bullet. So be careful with that. Shotguns firing shot generally cannot be matched to a specific firearm barrel due to the lack of rifling and the random contact the shots makes with the barrel as it is fired. Changing the barrel on a pistol is usually very easy and can be done by field stripping the weapon. Generally, no gunsmith is needed, and a new barrel is essentially a new drop and replacement part. Centerfire frangible ammunition, wounding potential, and other forensic concerns. A couple names there. AMJ Forensic, State of West Virginia, South Carolina. Oh, these are the guys that did the test. Okay, unimportant. Recently developed, well, you know, if you guys want to read up on this, know about it more, subscribe to the Paranoid Newsletter. Recently developed frangible ammunition of copper particulate construction in .38 special 9mm and .223 calibers was evaluated for wounding performance by firing in the pigs' heads. The ability to match fired bullets with the corresponding gun was also examined. Results showed that the wounds caused by 9mm and .38 special frangible bullets were comparable in severity to those caused by regular service ammunition of the same caliber. The recovered 9mm and .38 special bullets demonstrated class characteristics but not the individual firing marks necessary for bullet-to-gun matching. High velocity .223 caliber rifle bullets fragmented extensively within target tissue, causing severe wounding. Radiologic examination of resulting wounds shows images striking similar to the lead snowstorm picture caused by a high velocity hunting ammunition. In summary, this means that using frangible ammunition allows calibers to be determined, but matching a frangible slug to a certain caliber, but not to a certain firearm. Start buying frangible ammunition designed to shatter on impact rather than traditional ammunition. You know what? Out of all the things that the Paranoid Newsletter is talking about, this is what I'm probably most familiar with. But a frangible ammunition, I've never heard of it. And if I ask the guy at the gun store for frangible ammunition, will he be suspect? So that's what I need to find out. You know, just for target shooting. I by no means break any laws. I love everyone. Some localities, and by the way, I don't even own a firearm. See, I don't need... See, that's another thing, guys. I don't need to... I don't need to buy a firearm. I really don't. I have access to firearms, to other people's firearms, and they would never know that I had access to them. I'm not going to specify how that is, but if I was ever in that kind of jam, I know where I can get a firearm. Five-finger discount. I have access, I have keys, I have everything I need to get that firearm if I ever needed it. So I don't need to buy one. And I can just put it back to where it was when I'm done using it. Start buying frangible ammunition designed to shatter an... You know what? I mean, I would only do that in the realm of self-defense. So some localities, particularly Maryland, have attempted to build up a large database of fingerprints in the case of the Maryland law. All new firearm sales must provide a fired case from the firearm in question to the Maryland State Police, who photographed it and who photograph it and log the information in a database. You know what? I heard about this. So Illinois didn't have that. If you buy like a Glock in Illinois, inside your the pistol case, the carrying case, is an envelope, a little manila envelope with two spent shell casings in there. Now, if you lived in Maryland, you got to turn those in. And if you didn't, I guess they come looking for you or whatever. In Illinois, we don't have that. We can just discard those. But I'm sure that'll change. The Maryland State Police wrote a report. You know, I don't know what it is. Do I got fucking dyslexia or something? Pisses me off. The Maryland State Police wrote a report critical of the program and asking the Maryland General Assembly to disband it, since it was expensive and had not contributed to solving a single crime. Oh, okay, so it backfired. Subsequently, however, the database did provide evidence used to obtain one murder conviction and at an estimated cost of $2.6 million per conviction. So it's not cost effective then. A California Department of Justice survey using 742 guns used by the California Highway Patrol as a test bed showed very poor results. Even with such a limited database, less than 70% of cases of the same make as the fingerprint case yielded the correct gun in the top 15 matches. Less than 70% of cases of the same make as the fingerprint case yielded the correct gun in the top 15 matches. Well, that's not too bad. I mean, there's ways around all this stuff. When a different make of ammunition was used, the success rate dropped to less than 40%. Gunshot residue, also known as GSR, is principally composed of burnt and unburned particles from the explosive primer, the propellant, as well as components from the bullet, the cartridge case, and the firearm used. There are authors who use other definitions, such as cartridge discharge residue or firearm discharge residue, you know, CDR, FDR. GSR mainly focuses on residues containing lead, antimony, and barium. GSR contamination can be minimized by leaving the site of a shooting immediately. A pistol fired indoors was examined, and it was discovered that particles took 8 minutes to completely settle after being suspended in the air. And that's from the Forensic Science International, Volume 153, page 132. Industrial tool. Well, you know what? That's fine and good, but nothing beats latex gloves and coveralls, which are burned later. Industrial tools and fireworks are both capable of producing particles with a similar composition to GSR. Interesting. And several studies have suggested that car mechanics are particularly at risk of being falsely accused because some brake linings contain heavy metals and can form GSR-like particles at the temperatures reached during braking. Unburned gunpowders can have recognizable shapes, colors, and size of grains. Primer residues can adhere to fired bullets and gradually ablate, A-B-L-A-T-E, ablate through the path of the bullet. These primer residue may be found in targets or wounds at considerable distance from the muzzle, up to 200 meters. The cartridge case, bullet and bullet coating, and metal jacket also contain specific elements that can be detected. Virtually all cartridge cases are made of brass, 70% copper and 30% zinc. A few have a nickel coating. Primer cases are of similar composition. in parentheses, says CU-ZN. I wonder what CU is. ZN is probably zinc. Bullet cores are most often lead and antimony, with a very few having a ferrous alloy core. Ferrous. F-E-R-R-O-U-S. Ferrous. I guess I got to look that word up. Bullet jackets are usually brass, 90% copper with 10% zinc. But some are a ferrous, F-E-R-R-O-U-S, alloy, and some are aluminum. Some bullet coatings may also contain nickel. Modern gunpowder or smokeless powder can contain up to 23 organic compounds, according to an FBI study. Nitrocellulose is virtually always present, along with other compounds containing nitrate or nitrogen, one of the three compounds. Now this next word is diphenylamine. D-I-P-H-E-N-Y-L-A-M-I-N-E. I love sounding like a fucking dumbass, really. Used as a stabilizer in the powder. Can be detected using reagents. R-E-A-G-E-N-T-S. Reagents containing sulfuric acid. Maloney et al., 1982. Maloney, like it's, you know, like Father... Oh, no, it's Father Mahoney, that punk in L.A. All right, Maloney, you know, like the name, and then et al. What is that? E.T., and the next word is A.L., comma, 1984. Well, I hope you guys go out and purchase this issue of Paranoid Newsletter. Modern gunpowders are also described as single base when the basic ingredient is nitrocellulose, and as double base when there is additionally 1 to 40% nitroglycerin added. Hardy and Chera, these are two guys, got one named Hardy, one named Chera, C-H-E-R-A, 1979, describe a method to differentiate them using a mass spectrometer. Well, now they got gas chromatograph mass spectrometers. I mean, they got even more stuff now. Lead residues may mimic gunshot residue. Lead residues may be found up to 30 feet away from the muzzle. God damn it! And are always present on the opposite side of a penetrated target. False negatives result from washing of hands. When this area is sampled or by victim wearing gloves, a rifle or shotgun may not deposit GSR on hands. A rifle or shotgun may not deposit GSR on hands? Latent fingerprints may be detectable on cartridges and expended shell casings. Such fingerprints call latent because they are transferred via a substance on the skin ridges to an object. On a gun, such substances could include cleaning solvents or gun oils. Usually, the substance consists of perspiration mixed with oils from the sebaceous glands. Conditions of increased temperature and low humidity decrease the persistence of... persistence of fingerprints. Brass retains the fingerprints better than nickel-plated materials. In general, smaller caliber weapons, .22, yield fewer reproducible characteristics in fired bullets than weapons of larger calibers. The systems for identification of jacketed sporting rifle bullets use 12 parameters. 1. Identification number. 2. Manufacturer. 3. Weight. 4. Diameter. 5. Cartridge. 6, base design. 7, length of bearing surface. 8, color. 9, shape. 10, location and description of crimping channeler. That's C-A-N-N-E-L-U-R-E. I guess that's the where the casing is crimped around the actual round. 11, location and description of other channelers. And 12, miscellaneous notes. Suicide statistics, firearm, suicide entry, wound locations. And it has the site on the far left side, right temple, left temple. Handgun, 50% of the time, right temple. On the right temple, 22%. He gives a bunch of statistics here. Once again, please, please request a copy of the second Paranoid newsletter from Tom Metzger. Contact wounds are found in 97.9% of all legitimate firearm suicides. Contact wounds characteristically have soot on the outside of the skin and muzzle imprint or laceration of the skin from effects of gases. Contact wounds of air guns usually lack these features. Intermediate or close range wounds may show a wide zone of powder stippling. Stippling, that's the black soot that's left on the skin from a contact wound. But lack a muzzle's imprint and laceration. The area of powder stippling may depend upon the distance from the muzzle. Acetone and ethanol are very effective at removing nitroglycerin residue from the skin. Comments from a gunshot residue article written by Robert Allman Jr. Persistence of gunshot residues. Gunshot residues deposited on a person are continuously lost as a result of normal activities and as a consequence. It is difficult to generalize as to the period over which the residues would be retained. However, the length of time during which gunshot residues remain on hands and clothing of the firer is an important factor in evaluating evidence. If the residues are retained over a period of days, then gunshot residues found on a person's hands or clothing might have resulted from a firing several days prior to the incident. Under investigation. Kilty, 46, has reported the effect of hand activity and time on persistence of gunshot residues found on the hands. Persons who test fired guns had their hands examined for antimony and barium at various timed intervals after shooting. The shooter's activity was unrestricted after firing, except that hand washing was forbidden. This study led to the conclusion that 2 hours after firing, substantial amounts of antimony and barium were removed. Importantly, the same worker, 46, reported no evidence of gunshot residue deposition remaining on the hands of a shooter after the hands were washed with soap and water and then dried with paper towels. Activity shown to remove substantial amounts of antimony. Substantial amounts of antimony and barium include rinsing the hands under low pressure aerated water for 3 seconds, wiping the hands on clothing, and placing the hands in the pockets 3 times. In this study, a significant amount of primer residue still remained on the hands of the shooter after placing their hands in their pockets 3 times. A transfer of antimony and barium from the shooting hand to the non-shooting hand was noted when hands were wiped with towels following a shooting and when the shooter was handcuffed with his hands behind his back and then transported in an automobile. It has also been reported that nitroglycerin residues on a shooter's face, throat, and hands may be retained up to 7 hours. for unwashed hands of suicides, deposits have been present for 48 hours, perhaps for a much longer period. A contradictory result has also been reported by Douse in this author's study. No nitroglycerin was detected on hands a half hour after 11 test firings carried out with a variety of weapons and ammunition. The persistence of gunshot residue on cloth is much greater than on the skin. In test firings, which are carried out with the revolver, nitroglycerin, nitrocellulose, and diphenylamine. Oh, man! DIPHENYLAMINE have been detected on a variety of clothing types 6 hours after firing has taken place. I love sounding like a dumbass. Fucking love it. A jumper removed just after firing and stored. A jumper removed. That is a new sentence now. What the fuck is this? A jumper removed just after firing and stored undisturbed was found to retain readily detectable amounts of gunshot residue when examined the following day. No gunshot residues can be detected on the fire after the same time period. This suggests that the loss of gunshot residue is due to physical disturbance rather than any chemical degradation. It is further reported that the residue is due to physical disturbance rather than any chemical degradation. It is further reported that the residues deposited on a cloth and a cotton sheet placed one metro from a revolver which fired 5 shots. You mean 1 meter, right, dude? Placed on a cotton sheet 1 metro. I think you meant meter. Meter from a revolver which fired 5 shots remained detectable for a period of 2 months, providing the sheet was undisturbed during this period. Lloyd, another guy who took part in this test, reported nitroglycerin could be detected on garments which were worn with unrestricted activity for as long as 5 days after test firing. Whether or not the prolonged persistence of the residues on the clothing is of value depends on the availability of firearms in a relevant community. Clearly, much greater significance attaches to the results which access to firearms is restricted. Yep, I will definitely put myself on a line and look foolish in order for you guys to have information. Yep, definitely. Removing serial numbers from firearms. Pretty damn accurate comment pulled off the net. If a person grinding serial numbers off of metal really wants to obliterate the numbers and all trace of them, apparently stress relieving through annealing is necessary. Annealing, A-N-N-E-A-L-I-N-G. Alright, annealing is necessary. Alright, heat the thing up to a temperature that I don't know specific to the alloy. Hold it there for a while and let it cool. And apparently the crystal structure of the metal de-stresses and the serial number is no longer available to metallurgists. The gun may no longer be strong enough to use and will have severely oxidized unless the heating is done in a vacuum. What the heck, no serial number. Yes, annealing is an effective method for preventing forensic recovery of serial numbers from metal surfaces once the number has been defaced. The following is taken from a police manual. Methods used to obliterate identification marks. Filing or grinding, the original number would be filed away or ground with a powder grounder a power grinder, followed by polishing, and then over stamping with a new number. Peening, that's P-E-E-N-I-N-G, this involves hammering the surface with a round punch to hide the number. 3, over stamping, here a new number is simply stamped over the old one. For numbers with curved surfaces, i.e. like 2, 3, 5, 6, 9, and 0, the stamp 8 is one of the most often chosen. For numbers with straight surfaces, i.e. 1 and 7, and the stamp 4, the stamp 4 is the obvious choice. Serial numbers with a preponderance of 8 and 4 numbers should be treated with suspicion. Center punching. The surface bearing number is obliterated with a pointed punch. 5. Substitution. Substitution of an iron plate with a new number over the original surface by pasting or welding. I don't like that one. Drilling. It removes the number and the surrounding metal with the drill. The cavity is usually filled with either lead, solder, or welding material. That'll work. Welding. Heating the surface with either a oxyacetylene welder or an arc welder until the metal flows. Occasionally an original finish will be given to a previous obliterated number surface. Chemical etching method for restoration. Now, this is the one I heard about. I've heard stories about guys grinding off the number, and then they use a chemical to... What it is, they pour this chemical, it's like an acid, on where the number was when it was ground off. And then the metal under the number is harder than the metal around it, because when they punched the number on it, it made the metal more dense. So what it would do, it would eat away, this acid would eat away the softer metal and leave the hard metal, and then the shape of the hard metal was the old number. So the chemical etching method is the simplest and most effective method of restoring obliterated numbers. It is simple to apply and requires no expensive equipment. It works well on any size or type of object. The techniques involved require considerable skill and great patience. The materials used are potentially dangerous and should be used with full awareness of health and safety requirements. They should only be used in areas specially set aside for this purpose. Rubber gloves will protect the hands from the corrosive acid, and when using volatile liquids, work in the open air away from any seat of naked flame. If laboratory conditions are not available, period. In case of motor vehicles, remove the engine from the vehicle if necessary for ease of access to the engine number surface or for better quality of photographs of the restoration process. Well, I don't want to know about car engines, buddy. All right, preliminary examination. Examine the metal surface after cleaning oil and dirt away using acetone. Examine the surface with a hand magnifier and see whether any erasure has taken place at all. Look for any disturbance in the pattern at the background. Remember, what I'm reading right now came out of a police manual. All right, this pattern will be present either in the form of milled marks caused by grinding the surface before stamping in the serial numbers, or cast marks produced during the manufacturing process. If it is disturbed, suspect erasure. That means they tried to erase the number. Even if no erasure is noticed, remove the paint over a wide area around the surface to check whether the portion carrying the chassis number has been removed by cutting or substituted by welding. Or, you know what, I don't care about cars, dude. Stop the tape there and read the rest of this. If I was to read it to you, I think it'd put you guys to sleep. It really talks about how to restore numbers if they're grounded off the firearm and stuff like that. I just encourage you guys to get your copy of the second issue of the Paranoid Newsletter. I don't want to put you guys asleep out there, but I definitely believe that we should all of us should become familiar with this stuff, definitely. But because it's such dry reading, not that the guy who wrote it is dry, it's just technical stuff, and I think I'm doing a little bit too much of shows like that, just reading this stuff. I know it's boring, you guys, but I'm just hard up for everyone out there to know this stuff. Not like I'm some paragon of knowledge. It's not my knowledge. It's someone else's. But he's done a great service to bring us this knowledge. So I think it's great. I'm going to read a little bit, small passage here from Which Way Western Man. And it says, yet I am quite willing to concede that the effects of primary consequence were those that took place in myself, and about these, there is no question. I don't know how to say this name. R-E-N-A-N. Renan, as I recall, says somewhere in his Life of Jesus that no man shall come to complete freedom of soul until he has attained a supreme indifference to what men think of him. And this was the more necessary in me because I care too much for the good opinion of my fellows. But it was more than this that had to go underfoot before I could do such a thing. Well, I don't think that's anything new to you guys. I think you guys out there, I can't see of anybody being afraid of sharing their opinion or having a certain belief system out there. I think if you want to go under the radar to be useful in a very influential way as a ghost wolf, you not sharing your views, you're not being a coward at all, you're just being smart. Alright, today the herd virtues alone are holy. Traditional religion has made our I ashamed of itself. Everywhere, I as an, you know, when you say I, like in I believe this, I believe that. So when I say I, I'm not talking the I in your head, I'm talking about I as the letter you use to represent yourself. So let me read that again. Today the herd virtues alone are holy. The herd virtues are holy. They don't want no strong individualism no more. Traditional religion has made our I, the letter I, ashamed of itself. Everywhere it has crawled off to the edge of the camp with its tail between its legs like a whipped dog and sits there cowed and desolate. It must come sneaking into the world and can have face only in the disguise of service to the crowd, helping others, and doing good. Yet the prevalent thinking about unselfishness is so shallow and sentimental that it is important to declare flatly again and again that a purely unselfish act is a psychological impossibility. In one way or another, all actions are selfish. You know, George Clooney and all these freaking people, I almost cursed, with their all this mercy and compassion for Haiti. They're so fake, man. They're not doing it for themselves. I guarantee you deep down inside they're doing it because they want to be praised by other liberals in the Hollywood entertainment world. You know, they want their name to be lifted up. In fact, I saw a picture of George Clooney. I don't know if it was related to the Haiti thing or not. But he posed for a picture. It wasn't a picture. It was actually a film of him standing there smiling at the camera, surrounded by cameras, or surrounded by candles, you know. And the candles created like this aura about him. And it wasn't a picture, it was like he was there posing for this camera shot on TV. And I thought, oh my God, how pompous does this guy really, how pompous is this guy really? I mean, he's just so really full of himself. And that's what these people are. I mean, I think they really, they think they're better than everybody. They think they have a moral superiority over everybody. And when they talk about, usually white people, and they talk about black people, well, we got to do something for black people. If you don't do it, you're a racist. That makes them feel good about themselves because it's really a sneaky way of putting other people down. So when Simpson here says that William Gailey Simpson said that an unselfish act is a biological impossibility, he's right. All of us do something for, we may ostensibly say we do it for other people. I'm going to feed the homeless at this shelter. Are you really going there to feed the homeless, or are you going there because you like the praise from men? Think about it. Here's a short passage here. It says, but I am very certain that any people who are not rooted in a given piece of earth are approaching a day when a storm will blow them away. That is well said. And that's what the white race has become in contemporary modern America. We are rootless. There are no more white neighborhoods. There's no more white towns. System is taking care of that. Jew realtors have taken care of that. They're making sure that when a white man sells his home, he makes sure that a non-white buys it or tries to steer a non-white there, so. All right, I have a little bit of General Grievous to read here, and then we're done with this chapter of War of the Flea. Forward-looking, enterprising Aryans. Grievous intensified his campaign of terror and sabotage. The homes of British senior officers were bombed. British servicemen were shot down the streets. Bombs were tossed into clubs and taverns frequented by the troops. A servant who belonged to the EOKA even succeeded in planting a bomb under the mattress of Sir John Harding's bed. Fortunately for the governor, a sudden change in the temperature, so Grievous explained, affected the time pencil. The time pencil? Was the bomb made, or was the bomb a pencil? That's what it says. It says it affected the time pencil. And the bomb did not explode until after it had been discovered or removed. The British seemed to have learned little or nothing from their previous experience of terrorism elsewhere. Efforts to intimidate the civilian population that aided the EOKA only embittered it. The experiment of imposing collective fines on the Greek community and reprisals against attacks on the British forces, the levies ranged from a few hundred pounds in some small villages to 40,000 pounds in Famagusta and 35,000 in Limassol, was abandoned after 6 months as ineffective. I'm trying to put reparations on it, but I guess people refused to pay. Stern measures against the captured EOKA fighters were not only failed to act as a deterrent, but created severe political repercussions. When the first of the EOKA gunmen to be executed were hanged for murder in the central prison of Nicosia on May 10, 1956, huge demonstrations in Greece were called in protest. 7 persons were killed in a riot in Athens, and the mayor of that city solemnly hammered to pieces a marble plaque dedicated to Queen Elizabeth and Prince Philip before the eyes of a cheering crowd. Even the British press condemned the hangings. No doubt sympathy was felt for the two British hostages whom Grivas had executed by the EOKA the next day in reprisal for the executions. This General Grivas did not play. I mean, he was serious about it, man. You know, I mean, I'm sure the British portrayed him as this bloodthirsty killer, but he's doing what he had to get his island from being unoccupied by a foreign power. But the headlines were already been spent on what millions evidently considered a miscarriage of British justice. It is an irony of political warfare and a political fact to be considered and understood that the rules are not the same for both sides. British troops fared no better against the EOKA guerrillas in the countryside than against the terrorists in the towns. The troops burned thousands of acres of timber and scattered efforts to flush out guerrilla bands on the mountainsides. But few guerrillas were caught, and those were quickly replaced by others. Harding tried to strike back at the mountain groups, writes Grivas, but lacking any comprehensive plan and failing to grasp our methods, he had few successes. His activities were dependent on spasmodic tips from informers, which were often inexact and unreliable, and led him to concentrate on narrower zones. As many as 50 truckloads of troops would be poured into one small area, which would be searched for a day. But nearly always we slipped away before the search began and watched its progress from the neighboring heights, certain that they would not extend their operation beyond its original limits. What should have been done? Examining his opponent's problem in retrospect, Grivas says, Harding persisted in his error. He understood his enemy on one hand and outweighed his forces on the other, but one does not use a tank to catch a field mouse. A cat will do the job better. The field marshal's only hope of finding us was to play cat and mouse and to use tiny, expertly trained groups, who could work with cunning and patience and strike rapidly when we least expected it. Interesting. No such groups were ever deployed. The war continued along the lines and with the results that might have been expected. What Harding was unable to accomplish with 20,000 troops in 1956 could not be accomplished by his successor with twice that many in 1958. 43,000 British soldiers were on Cyprus when the shooting ended, but what were they doing there? Few could have said. Certainly they were not keeping the peace. Grivas offers his record of EOKA activities on October 2, 1958, as giving an idea of the scale of operation at that time. Larnaca, soldier killed by a bomb, civilian agent dead by execution squad. Nicosia, bomb thrown into police headquarters from a car, casualties unknown. Famagusta, two armed trucks ambushed, casualties unknown. Limassol, eight Britons injured by bomb at an Acropole hotel. Four soldiers injured by a bomb thrown at a truck. Platani, two soldiers killed, two wounded in a mine truck. Mined as in like a landmine. Panaya, Stavros, two soldiers killed, two injured in ambush. Pyroi, truck ambush, casualties unknown. Misoi, two soldiers killed in ambush of truck. I probably sound like a dumbass pronouncing these cities. I bet I'm abusing the hell out of them. Pyi, that's P-I-Y-I, Pyi. Two soldiers killed, two wounded in a mine truck, and Peristorona, bombs thrown at two army trucks, casualties unknown. The British authorities embittered the struggle that did little to change its course. by involving the Turkish community in the fighting. The recruitment of Turks into the police and incitement of latent racial antagonisms produced some bloody civilian massacres and a tragic toll of innocent lives on both sides. By divide and rule as an instrument of British policy, it failed in Cyprus. The eventual political settlement was reached in the Zurich and London agreements establishing the Republic of Cyprus under a constitution written by London, Athens, and Ankara was less than satisfactory to Gribas. He had fought for independence of the island as a step toward union with Greece, and this was denied. But the British could scarcely claim they had won even a partial victory. They had paid a heavy price in money, lives, and prestige during 4 years of futile fighting, and had nothing to show for it but a paper compromise that was worse than outright defeat. Where there had been a troublesome colonial question, an explosive international issue was created, and one that remains to date a grave threat to peace in the Mediterranean, a threat not least of all to the British themselves. As to the conflict that led to Zurich, it was round by round a series of clear defeats for colonial arms and colonial policies. The British proceeded against the EOKA as against a band of ordinary criminals, relying on methods that would be used to put down an outbreak of banditry and seeming never to realize what had been perfectly clear to Gribas from the start. I laugh aloud when I read that General A or General B had come to Cyprus to put into operation the methods that had won him fame elsewhere. They could not understand that the Cyprus struggle was unique in motive, psychology, and circumstance, and involved not a handful of insurrectionists, but the whole people. Very, very cool. Interesting guy. And when our guerrilla struggle takes place, it'll be unique in its own self. So we must secure the existence of our people and a future for white children. Carpe noctem, seize the night. Starve the sheep inside you and feed the wolf. I mean, part of your mental makeup, shield wall, and wolf heart.